I know a little something about us building this facility, in case you don't know who I am. All right, so now I want to go right to Bill's story, because sometimes I dally, and I like to spend time in Bill's story and stay away from the doctor's opinion every once in a while, so we can focus on an experience, if that's all right with you. How many of you had doctors give you an opinion that you may have been a little persuasive on how you got that opinion and maybe shaded the truth a little bit? How many of you followed their advice to the letter? Most of us have not. So sometimes testimony from peers is more persuasive, yes? Not telling you what you should do, but here's what I did. This is what I experienced as a result. All right, so I'm on page 5 of the book. We're in Bill's story. It says, liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. How many of you can feel the power of the desperation in his testimony? Any of you remember that time in your mind emotionally when you thought you were having fun and pretty soon you knew it was work, and not only was it work, it was going to be a lot of work and I got to do it anyway. That's what it feels like to cease to be a luxury. He describes it for him, gin, 2 bottles a day and often 3 got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s and I would pay my bills at the bars and delicatessens. This went on endlessly and I began to awaken very early in the morning, shaking violently. That's what it looked like for him. How many of you got yourself in a wreck and then started hanging out more and more frequently in those places and got on the hook, borrowing money if they'd let you? How many of you started doing things to get something you wanted that you really never thought you'd find yourself doing? A tumbler full of gin followed by a half dozen bottles of beer would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. Now we chuckle about that, but they're trying to... A lot of people get here and think that addiction or alcoholism is a condition of choice, and they teach it. But that is only true if you do not believe in mental illness. So what we're looking at is the manifestation of mental illness in Bill. And he's saying, in spite of the fact that he drank everything away, was on the hook everywhere he was, woke up sick every morning, shaking violently and had to go hustle, find a way, throw up a few times, clear himself up a little, go get a little more. How many of you were drinkers like that? How many of you needed to get well enough so you just threw up back in the cup so you could drink it again so you could... I'm telling you the real deal. And I thought that was normal.
Well,
nevertheless, hey, dude, I was controlling the situation. Are you with me? And I don't care what chemical you chased, we all did degrading things.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Is that what I'm saying? Okay. And then it said, and there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. How many of you had some people watching you? Look, he's doing so good. You got this. And you're thinking, well, I hope so. Anybody? Okay. So then he says, gradually things got worse. You want to hear how he describes gradually? You got to get inside of his experience here. The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. And it takes months. How many of you got thrown out? And it takes a while. Like, you got to ignore it. You break through the pass lock a few times. Any of you ever just break the lock off the lockbox off the thing? No lockbox breakers? Takes a while. My mother-in-law died and my wife and father-in-law became ill. So everything's crashing around him and he's considering it a gradual experience. Can you relate? Then I got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at a low point in 1932 and I had somehow formed a group to buy. How many of you got an opportunity in the middle of a run? How many of you discovered it wasn't quite the opportunity you thought it was? And how many of you actually did have an opportunity, but you missed it? I was to share generously in the profits. Then I went on a prodigious bender in that chance vanished. So I went to celebrate profits to come, and then the chance to get profit went away. So he said, I woke up. This had to be stopped. How many of you have had that moment in your addiction? How many of you have had it immediately followed by a fairly strong conviction that this is the chances are not good? Fair and partly cloudy at best. Right? So he said, I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. How many of you really meant it? I'm not doing it again. And I mean it this time. Not even one. What happened to you when you did that? I was dead serious. I was telling you the God's truth. I know it's not safe, and I will not do it again. And then what Bill said is, shortly afterward, I came home drunk. You could substitute Joe in that, too. That's what happened to me, too. There had been no fight. How many of you were perplexed by that? It's baffling, isn't it? When they talk about cunning, baffling, powerful, we blow through that like it don't mean nothing. But we go completely apeshit nuts. Where had been my high resolve? He's really searching. You need to have that level of search, because if you still think there's some part of you that's going to fix this, you will employ it. That's been my experience. I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy?
Yes. Of course.
Did you think about that at the time?
No.
Was it right after?
No.
Did you contemplate it and then take the drink, or did you just have the drink down or the drug down and then go, ooh, this was not a good idea? They warn you about the insanity of the first drink. So we're trying to find ourselves roughly. If we do, then we want to keep reading. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So it said, I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. So they're telling you the insanity we're talking about is an appalling lack of perspective. Temporary relief is worth months or years of suffering. Or I don't consider it at all in light of the experience I've had. And some of us have had some pretty gnarly experiences that should, if I were reacting sanely and normally, have stopped me from doing that. Yes? So, renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. How many of you had that happen? Those are weird words for us in modern day. But when confidence is replaced by cocksureness, I've simply confused the experience of grace, the obsession lifted, with the illusion of control. I got this. And when that happens, it's just a matter of time. Because I'm really not a substance aficionado. Anything will do. My addiction is to control itself. And it doesn't matter what it is, right? Those are symptoms. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into the bar or cafe to telephone. In no time I was beating on the bar asking how it had happened. Have you ever done that? Casually ended up with something in your system? What happened in your thinking as whatever substance started rising up in you? Well, shoot. I don't know how we're going to cover this one. Might as well get good and drunk now, right? Said, as as whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I'd manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. See how the illusion of control, he gave it no thought, he knew it was dangerous, he drank himself into the hospital many times, he's told you the kind of drunk he was, just like me. So there was no possibility this was going to turn out well. But he did it anyway, and then in the middle of that delusion, he convinced himself he made that choice. So later I can be condemning of me and keep me in the cycle. That's how this chemical demon gets us. It's all about me and bad choices. You cannot make a choice with an unsound mind. You only have to determine if by your actions and your relating to this, if you really think those were sound decisions. And if they were not, then you had displayed an appalling lack of perspective. And if that's true, you might want to consider what the rest of the story is. Does that make sense? So, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. Give yourself the opportunity to bring to consciousness, you knew you shouldn't do it, it's not safe for me to do it, but now I've done it, and I'm waking up, and I've really done it. I've just run the wheels off this wagon. And I'm waking up now feeling sick, and I've let everyone down that was paying attention. Have that experience, and tell me if you don't understand what he's talking about, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning run for your. Some of you are feeling that now. I'm feeling you feel it. That is that depth of spirit experience we're looking for. That is that feeling of defeat. Not it. Yes? He told you it was unforgettable.
Right.
We got to go to his lows if we want to attain his highs. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. So the courage to do battle was not there. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. I hardly dared cross the street lest I collapse and be run down by an early morning truck, for it was scarcely daylight. An all-night place supplied me with a dozen glasses of ale. My writhing nerves were stilled at last. A morning paper told me that the market had gone to hell again. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. Then he said that was a hard thought. Go with him on a hard thought. Any of you get to the point where you figured out that if I don't try and clean up again, I can't fail again? So all I really need to do is just ride this thing out. That's a hard thought, isn't it? Because it gets tougher and tougher, doesn't it? And we get more and more self-degrading. Yeah? The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? How many of you considered those types of things?
Yes.
Where's my opiate addict? How many of you didn't consciously say, should I kill myself, but you loaded that rig a little heavy? Look, I've been with enough, and I've been there myself enough that I know that I'm always hoping some event's going to take me, so I don't have to do anything else about it. And some of you have done that, you know, suicide by a cop. I've got, you know, I know the jail, right? Some of you, I don't know who's in the room that's got that going on, but that's a thing too. No, not now. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that, so two bottles and oblivion. Again, assuming that I have choice. The only go-to I got is the poison that got me here. Do you relate to that? Okay. So the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms, for mine endured this agony 2 more years. Sometimes I stole from my wife's slender purse when the morning terror and madness were on me. Again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself for a weakness. How many of you stole from somebody in the house you were living with and there was no earthly explanation for where whatever you stole went but to you? And there was no way you were caught to it. I'll help you look. Yes?
100%.
And is that normal behavior?
No.
No? every area of my life. I'm lying, they know I'm lying, and I am powerless to stop lying. Some of you are feeling that. First step experience, an admission of powerlessness and unmanageability, shouldn't be a happy experience. If that isn't starting to make your leakers go, then we didn't, God touched you enough. Does it make sense? All right, so there were flights from city to country and back as my wife and I sought escape. Then came the night when physical and mental torture was so hellish, I feared I would burst through my window, sash and all. Somehow I managed to drag my mattress to a lower floor, lest I suddenly leap. The doctor came with a heavy sedative. Next day, found me drinking both gin and sedative. How many of you did a little cross addiction or switch? Because one thing I have learned about methamphetamines, for a certain class of people, they solve a drinking problem. Any of you had a similar discovery? Where's my opiate addicts? Opiates, too, can solve a drinking problem. The problem with that is that they're nowhere near as effective when you're out of opiates. You can't switch that back. Any of you get caught, the doctor thought you may have had a little Valium deficiency? If you're a serious enough drinker, they'll treat your Valium deficiency every once in a while. They used to do it a lot more. Ativan? Yeah. Good, we got some chemists here. Did we not get sicker quicker once we started playing that game?
Yes.
Better living through chemistry. So he said, this combination soon landed me on the rocks. You know how people have gotten so particular about we don't talk about drugs here, and we don't talk about drinking here, and you got to say the right words? Dude, the author of the majority of this book is telling you he was a stone junkie, and he had a fondness for liquor.
Yep.
Any kindred spirits here? People feared for my sanity, so did I. I could eat little or nothing when drinking. I was 40 pounds underweight. My brother-in-law is a physician, and through his kindness and that of my mother, I was placed in a nationally known hospital for the mental and physical rehabilitation of alcoholics. Under the so-called belladonna treatment, my brain cleared. Hydrotherapy and mild exercise helped much. Best of all, I met a kind doctor who explained that though certainly selfish and foolish, I had been seriously ill. Bodily and mentally. How many of you went to a hospital and then got referred to a residential treatment center because they told you you were seriously ill? Bodily, and then they sent you to have something done with your mind. How many of you heard little techniques like don't pick up no matter what? Play the tapes and think it through. Those are things that will happen for people who end up in the hospital and then get referred to residential treatment, and they'll sound like better plans than self-searching, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings, restitution for harms done.
Right.
But if I do that bullshit they were talking about, I end up in places like this. And the only way you get here is to go places that are gated. Because that's how we play.
Betting for us?
Yes. Some of us have bounced through some of the high ends. Don't matter, dude. Stone cold floors are stone cold floors. Okay, so it relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor. One thing Bill learned because of Dr. Silkworth's testimony to him was that, dude, you were born with a condition. You drank until you couldn't drink, but the way you drank was predetermined based on the allergic reaction you apparently have to that substance alcohol.
Yep.
And by the time you're trying to stop and stay stopped, you find you have a little different difficulty doing so. And it's an illness. And you're going to have to understand that when you have an illness, you got to seek medical help to help you come back. And they're not going to try and cure your mental illness. They're going to try and help you manage it. Same thing we do now, right? The first step in managing it is acknowledging that I have it.
Yep.
The authors say we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves. Because if I don't think I have, you know what? I had a stroke a month ago.
What?
Yeah. And I don't know. I was out of the hospital in a day or so. Why not just go back to work? Ain't nothing wrong here. Guess what? It's not true. My mind doesn't function the way it did a month ago. I get nauseous while I'm standing here talking to you, just facing the room. I literally get nauseated, like I can't hardly stand behind this podium. So I've stopped coming and I've been going to therapy. You know why I did that? Because a therapist told me, look, here's all the deficits. You've lost eyesight on this side of your head, and so your mind's working overtime to try and fix it. And it can't, and so you're fatigued, and you're nauseous, and you're going to die if you keep doing it, Joe. Mm-hmm. And I believed him.
Yep.
That's why y'all don't see me around here much right now. Mm-hmm. I still minister, because this is what I do.
Right.
But I'm telling you, my alcoholic diagnosis took me more than 3 weeks to accept. But it is no less lethal.
Yes.
That's all I'm trying to say. I've learned to accept medical advice today. No. The Holy Spirit takes care of me while I do this, and then I get the hell on out of here. He just wants to use me for a minute. All right. So, it says, my incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
Yeah.
I went through the whole story about treatment centers because they fill us with self-knowledge, don't they?
Yeah.
And you could do a step experience and not have the depth of it, and you would gain some self-knowledge, wouldn't you?
Right.
If you don't take it seriously, you'll just start parroting everyone else, and you won't get the relief that's intended, and that's a tragedy. And that's why we're trying. We want you free. Not a little free, all the way free. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more.
Yeah.
The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. See the picture he's painting?
Yeah.
How many of you had some clean time after you got pretty serious, and then you went off again, and it didn't just get bad, it got bad quick. That's what going off a ski jump feels like. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. They did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea.
That's right.
Any of you get there?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, man, just save me from me. It was a devastating blow to my pride. How many of you stayed sick because your ego wouldn't let you to a person we'll do it?
Amen.
Yeah. Amen.
And let me tell you, it won't make you unique to finally own, I'm too sick to get out by myself. Because guess what? All of us. Number one, we don't even know we're sick till we meet someone who's been redeemed. And if we do know, we don't believe it. Which is why the Spirit shared with you a little story of the difference between my alcoholism and addiction diagnosis and my most recent diagnosis, which I got taken seriously right away.
Yeah.
All right, so I who had thought so well of myself, my abilities, and my capacity to surmount obstacles was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining that endless procession of sots who had gone on before. I thought of my poor wife. There had been much happiness after all. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. How many of you got so out there that family members, you thought the harm you'd inflicted was too great and you could never do anything about it? How many of you used that as an excuse to continue in what you were doing? What's funny is we don't need an excuse to continue in what we're doing. Isn't it funny how we're still looking for an excuse and we are obviously off the freaking rails? Like, ain't nobody looking for nothing. You know how you know that? When you start doing better, they don't believe it. They had no expectation you'd do better. So Why stay sick if you really want to get well? Don't worry about other people's expectations. Does that make sense? We people say, I don't care what anyone thinks. Well, you're dying because you apparently do. We should shatter that illusion with you. Okay. So then it says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity.
Yep.
I tried to describe to you in a humorous way what it feels like, but when we get to that point, I can't get out. I can't admit to anyone else I can't get out. I'm not tough enough to get dead. Poor me. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. How many of you scrambled? You understand what he's saying? What happens when you struggle in quicksand?
You sink.
You sink faster. How many of you had people telling you, just don't pick up no matter what?
Right.
Fight it out. If you're fighting an addiction, you're doing it wrong. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity is returned. Does that make sense? I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. So my first admission of powerlessness is to the chemical that enslaves me. Or the behavior. May not be a chemical at all. Maybe a behavior. I mean, I meet lots of people who drug addiction was not the main problem. It was just maladaptive thinking, which landed them in pickles. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit, and then came the insidious insanity of that first drink, and on Armistice Day 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that would have to be put up, be shut up somewhere, or would stumble along to a miserable end. How many of you had a little clean time, went off the rails, had a little clean time, went off the rails? Then it happened again, and like they ain't no cheering squad after that. Like not even the people in your fellowship's cheering anymore. You know what I'm talking about? No, I had those experiences. I went in and had an old timer tell me, whatever you do, Joe, never get so egoic you won't stand up and get your 24-hour chip. Always take your 24-hour chip, and eventually I promise you, you'll get better. I had so many, I supplied the homeless shelter for probably a month. And if you've ever been to the homeless shelter, you will know that everyone that goes to the meeting every day takes a 24-hour shift. Because they got nothing, so if you're giving it away, they take it. And here I stand before you many, many years sober with a lot of things behind me, but I'm telling you, I had people making fun of me. Are you ever going to quit standing up under 30 days? Not if I keep drinking by day 29, son. Are you feeling what I'm telling you? I don't know where you're at, but for some reason I'm supposed to share with you the guy you see standing here now, the one who was betting on him. Not anybody. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last devout. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. So we hear people talk about being rocketed into a fourth dimension. He's talking about a fourth dimension of existence where I don't live in worry or remorse. I'm here and now, not there and out here, right? And he tells you the experience of it. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly, incredibly more wonderful as time passes. So if I will employ these principles and I will adopt this manner of living as my own, then I will have a progressive wellness in place of my progressive illness. I don't know why everyone's not signing up for that if we present it correctly. Yes? Near that end of the bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen with a certain satisfaction. I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. Where's my drinkers?
Yeah.
Were you hiders?
Oh, yeah.
Drinkers are hiders. And if you're not drinkers, you don't get it. Meth addicts, you guys are hiders too. I put enough of you in treatment. We have to cut the linings out of your underwear and everything. You got that shit hidden everywhere. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. How many of you took your drinking far enough out, or whatever combination, where you had to have a nudge to even move? And the first one was probably coming up. Maybe the first three or four. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. He put that in italics because he wants you to know who Ebby was to him. How many of you took it out pretty far?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in this room, I can assume. So, how many of you, no matter how bad you got, maintained at least one friend who now you could just look at least I'm not that bad? Got a little hard to find after a while, didn't it? Well, that's who Ebby is for Bill. I'm not that bad yet. Bill's already told you what he is, but Ebby's worse. And he's going to talk to you about how impossible it is that Ebby's coming and he's sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. What condition?
Sober.
He didn't go nowhere sober. Any of you relate?
Yeah.
I think we were sober for years. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Dude ain't sober. He busted out.
Yeah.
Any of you relate to that sort of thinking? Of course he'd have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. That special friend who's worse than me, no matter how bad I am, he's worse than me, so I can drink openly with him. He ain't going to give me no lecture, and I definitely don't need no lecture. Anybody relate to that? Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a JAG. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. So he's questioning, he's thinking, and he's putting on full display the delusional thinking. Not only is he wrecking his friend, if his sobriety is real, he's probably killing him. And he's so messed up that he thinks this is an oasis. What is an oasis, typically? It may be water in a very arid place,
or a mirage.
But if I'm near death, it could very well be a mirage, and the mirage is so potent that I'll drink the sand. Does anyone feel what he's putting down? He's putting down a very powerful image if you internalize what he's talking about. And then he said drinkers are like that, so we're trying to understand the nature and the depth of that illness, aren't we?
Right.
So the door opened and he stood there fresh skinned and glowing. I challenge you, men, take a look at your drinking buddy and describe him to me with a straight face as fresh skinned and glowing. That is a bizarre way for a man to describe his drinking buddy. Yes?
Yeah.
So there is something super different about his appearance and effect. Yes?
Yes.
Then he goes on to describe it some more. There was something about his eyes. How many of you spent enough time in addiction that people started seeing light in your eyes one time again?
Oh, yeah.
And they told you there's life in there. He's starting to talk about a dead man standing before him, raised. And he didn't even have to announce it yet. The presence on him announced it, which is what he's describing. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? So now he's questioning himself. This is turning something up in me. I'm drunk and drinking. And this, whatever it is, has got me. I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Have you ever been disappointed but curious? Because I'm skeptical. I know this cat. If he's not drinking, he's here as a spy for some motherfucker. You feel me? Come, what's all this about? I queried. Now I need him to tell me. He looked straight at me, simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I felt the whole room go there. It does not matter your religious upbringing and training. When you're drunk and drinking, and you know you probably oughtn't to be, and the cat sitting with you announces, I've got religion, the fun meter is going, this is going to suck with a capital S-U-C-K. Right? So he says, I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion.
Yeah.
How many of you had that? Look, I can get past this. A little twitchy. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching.
Yep.
See, if I got enough dope, you can talk nonsense all day if you want to. Just do not get between me and my faith.
Right.
Here's the problem with Evie. He had known a spiritual experience. So the encounter was not what Bill expected. And he describes he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. The man who couldn't be sober should be dead or incarcerated, was neither dead nor incarcerated, very much alive, and he wasn't screaming from the rooftops. He said, two dudes I really didn't know said they would vouch for me, and they said all I needed to know is that God dwells in you. Power dwells in you. And a practical program of action that will prove that fact to you through you. Don't need no religion, but we do need a religious idea about which most of us have been confused. Yes? So then it says, he had come to pass his experience along to me if I cared to have it. Notice how he did not come to give a list of treatment resources, meeting lists, books to read, change your playmates and playgrounds. When he opened the door to Evie, the experience passed to Bill, which is why Bill was troubled with his description, but he knew this man was different. Does that make sense? You don't need religion when you've got the power smacking you in the face. What you need is relationship. So then it said, certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. That's all it takes, guys. If you're presented with the experience, someone who's known an experience, and you can admit your hopeless condition, then the rest of the story is also for you.
Right.
He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that proffered temperance pledge I never signed. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings, his insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died, these recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. He's describing his first conscious relation with the power that he had previously been denying, because he's now thinking back to being raised by a grandfather who always believed in something that he didn't quite describe nor push on anyone, and he was absolutely defiant, even unto death, of the preacher to tell him what that was about. I know who God is. He's in me. I don't need your rules to tell me my destination, sir. And then what he says is, those recollections came to him, and it made him swallow hard. How many of you have had something hit you so powerfully in the spirit that an emotion you didn't even know you had anymore suddenly overwhelmed you? That's how you know you're alive, or that there's life in you. Yes? Because a lot of us were emotionless for a long time. And then these things start happening. So when I have to swallow hard, that's what he's describing. He'll talk of more recollections later, and we'll get to them in another lesson. But I just want everyone to understand, we're not talking about concepts, we're not talking about podiums, we're not talking about light bulbs or doorknobs or groups of drunks. I'm talking about tangible power to live found in each and every one of us. And if you would like to grow in consciousness of it, you will find you will live abundantly. And if you don't, then you'll block out the consciousness of your miserable existence the best you can. Because that's what we all do to a man and a woman. Does that make sense? All right, so that day in the wartime day in the Winchester Cathedral came back again. Remember, he was getting ready to go to war? He was scared, and he went to pray to a God he didn't believe in? I'd always believed in a power greater than myself. I'd often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means the blind faith in a strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation, but that was as far as I had gone. All he's telling you is his simple thinking that perhaps there's more to this life than me.
That's right.
That's it. And he's just trying to help people understand whatever you thought before this time, set it aside for a minute. Allow time for you to have the experience and own the experience and then walk it out and see if life doesn't change. Right. That makes sense. So with ministers in the world's religions, I parted right there. So he's not telling you he remained atheist. He said he quit getting his religion and he started getting his relationship based on a manner of living. And it took a peer to get him there. Right? Because even though he may have been one of the early ones, someone had to talk to him. And then he had to keep talking to people because you guys, when I go out to talk to you, the healing I need that I can clearly see you need, I don't know I need, but it flows through me to you because I cannot transmit what I do not have. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So with ministers in the world's religion, I parted right there when they talked of a God personal to me. Good work. Who is love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. How many of you really get bugged the minute we start talking anything that sounds like a bad religious experience? Or did it one time? That's okay. Just own that that's happening in your thoughts. It's not a reality anymore. Right? There's something else in play. Just because it was that way once doesn't have to be that way forever. Just because I was once that, I'm no longer that, I'm this. Yes? Okay. I'm going to jump because I don't want to get into a whole bunch of stuff. I'm going to get down to the middle of the page 11. It says, but my friend sat before me, and he made the point blank declaration that God, power had done for him what he could not do for himself. You cannot make a point-blank declaration with credibility unless you believe it. Truth has a feel. I've heard lots of people profess power, and it had no depth and weight.
Right.
But if somebody comes before you and witnesses in the Spirit to the powerful redemption of dead man to life,
yep.
And they know the experience. I guarantee you it comes with power. And that's why we're uniquely useful. Does that make sense? His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. How many of you had doctors? Or CO3s? Or whatever pronounced you incurable. Clemency boards. Incurable. I'm saying it to one of my life friends. I don't know how many clemency boards he went to, and he always was getting the same thing, but you know, his faith, he kept going back. And the last one I watched him go to, they said, let him go. And if you don't know John, he's somebody you should get to know while he's here. That's a walking miracle, even when he doesn't believe it.
Amen. Amen.
So, like myself, he'd admitted, his human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. And then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he'd ever known. That's the description of being recovered. It's a mining term, not a medical term. To take from something that was thought waste and extract something infinitely valuable. That's why when we say we're recovered because I'm not telling the story of a dead man. I'm talking about a redeemed man.
Amen.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Had this power originated in him? I know him. He's a dead man. So clearly the power had not originated in him. But he had access to it. Obviously, it did not. There'd been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and this was none at all. That floored me. It began to look as though the religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in the human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped new soil. So that whole description of why he's so different, he's realizing, although this power is not of him, it's obviously in him.
Yeah.
And he's telling me that I can have access to it, because he had come to pass that experience on to me if I cared to have it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? A minute ago, to the bottom of that page, it says, thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough.
Yep.
At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed.
Amen.
I need you to understand something. When people talk about things like groups of drunks and doorknobs, they're killing people. It's not cute. It's not clever. These are precise instructions on how to access power. This is not religion. This is facts from peer-led experiences. And they're not asking you to believe based on faith entirely. They're giving you a demonstration. Signs and wonders follow us. So I saw, then I felt, and then I believed, because someone told me what I was feeling was that power we call.
Right, power.
That's good. We left you on a signature. Let's get out of here.